Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad when you're here with us. And if you'd like to join our conversations, you may do that as well. Phone number is 800-838-3760, anywhere in the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We have a couple of big weeks in regional environmental news. Within the hour, Oregon's governor and both senators are expected to gather in Klamath Falls to announce the final work of the Water Task Force set up in the Klamath Basin. We'll deal with that on future editions of the Exchange. We'll spend this segment further digesting the plan for managing federal timber recently announced by Senator Ron Wyden. The ONC Land Grant Act of 2013 would take the former Oregon and California railroad lands historically managed for timber production and county revenue and divide them up. One portion would be managed more intensively for timber, forestry emphasis it's called. The other would be largely preserved, conservation emphasis that's called. So the plan contains benefits and turnoffs for all interested parties. Today we'll hear from a couple of environmental groups. Here in the studio with me is Dominic Della Sala once again, forest ecologist and chief scientist at the Geos Institute based in Ashland. Dominic, welcome back.
Good morning on this blustery, wintry day.
Ooh, it is a chilly one. Joseph Vail is with us as well by phone. He is the executive director at the Klamath Siskiyou Wildlands Center, known far and wide for short as KS Wild. Hi, Joseph.
Hello there.
So let's get the take individually for each of you. I mean, obviously we can talk more ecologically minded with Dominic and more legally and politically minded with Joseph. So, Dominic, what's the initial role that you get from looking at the ONC Land Grant Act of 2013?
Well, there's a number of good things in the bill that I think conservation groups are supportive of. Some potential wilderness additions, wild and scenic additions, and a minor expansion of the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument, to name a few. And then there are a number of poison pills where we continue to play this game of Jenga with our forests, where we are pulling the pieces out that are holding the ecosystems together that we depend on for clean air, clean water, and all the values we get out of our forests. So there's a lot of those poison pills in this bill.
Now, what are a couple, for example?
Well, you know, if you look at forests, and, you know, a lot of the concern is around old growth, and the bill does a fair job of protecting older forests, but it doesn't protect the middle-aged forests that are needed to come into that older age class. It would be like if your Social Security benefits were canceled at the age of 62. They decided no longer to give you a benefit until you were ready, very old, and that's when you got your benefit. And so those middle-aged forests are really crucial to our water, our salmon, and our wildlife, and they lose their protections.
So they are really available for logging, is what you're saying.
They would be available for a lot of more clear-cut logging. It's more of a modified clear-cut, and we would see more of those on our slopes in the Rogue Valley and in the Siskiyous.
Right, I want to ask you about the clear-cuts, though, because I know that that's often a claim made, and particularly in connection with this bill, as people read it. I understand 188 pages altogether.
That's right. We were speed reading it about a week ago.
And so are clear cuts specifically called for in here, or is the language sufficiently vague that it would at least allow clear cuts?
You know, it depends on what you mean by a clear cut. And a forester would look at it differently than a wildlife biologist would. But, you know, I've been out on the field. I've seen these units before. I would refer to them as partial clear cuts because they leave some trees together in clumps or dispersed in the unit. But, you know, to me, it looks like a clear cut. It smells like a clear cut, so it must be a clear cut ecologically.
All right. Joseph Vail at the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center, KS Wild. What's your initial take on the Wyden bill?
Well, I agree in large part with what Dominic said. You know, there are some great things in this bill, and in particular, I think the senator should be commended for identifying some really important spots, especially here in southern Oregon. And if you look at this ONC landscape, you know, a lot of it is a checkerboard. But down here in southern Oregon, we have the biggest BLM district in Oregon, at the Medford District. And throughout your listening area, you know, there are these ONC lands. And they do have a lot of old growth on them, but they also have primitive areas, which were identified in the bill, and wild and scenic rivers. The Wild Rogue flows through ONC lands. So I know... I think in your lead-in you talked about them being, you know, primarily for timber production, but I think over the last several decades there's been a lot more interest in recreation on these lands and the clean water that they produce. If you drive out to the Applegate Valley, you know, you're driving through ONC land, many farms, vineyards, people that live out in their dream homes, many of them live adjacent to these very forests that are at stake in this bill. So there are some good things in the bill, and I don't want to forget about that. But, yeah, there are some poison pills, and specifically Dominic mentioned some of them around the type of forestry that would be allowed. And for a lot of people that are really interested in having a say in how their public lands are managed, there is what we see is a very dangerous precedent, which would essentially take a lot of the public input out of public lands management on these lands and really give a lot of deference to BLM timber managers to move forward with huge plans for logging without much public input.
That part in particular seems to give a number of environmental groups a bit of a cramp. And so describe a little more in detail, if you would, Joseph, about what the provisions are that would really limit the ability for people to get input and appeal powers.
Yeah, and like you said, the bill is 188 pages, and just that section is, oh, many pages. So I'll try to simplify it a little bit. Really, so what they would do is they would have two large plans for this BLM federal estate, which is about over 2 million acres spread out from Portland to Ashland, and it's this huge landscape. So there'd be two plans that would one for the north and one for the south part of the state, and those plans would be 10-year-long timber plans, essentially. And one of the things that's kind of concerning about those plans is one of the drivers in there is producing revenue, and it's while there are some sideboards on, you know, protecting old growth, we're concerned with that revenue production being a driver of what goes into those timber plans. And then once those timber plans are enacted, you can't really have much, you certainly can't stop any timber sale that's tiered to those plans for 10 years. So, you know, think about that. Think about what was going on 10 years ago. We'd still be dealing with timber sales from a plan 10 years ago. We're really afraid that those plans are going to be very vague, and they're going to cover huge areas that people aren't really going to know exactly what's going to happen. Especially, say you live out in the Applegate Valley, you have ONC lands in your backyard. They come out with a timber plan. You don't really know exactly what they're going to do. They say they might be building some roads. They might be, you know, affecting your water supply. We think that folks should have a right to give input and try to negotiate solutions with the BLM on a scale that is much smaller than all of Southern Oregon over the course of 10 years.
We're getting an environmental perspective on Senator Ron Wyden's timber plan, the ONC Land Grant Act of 2013, from Joseph Vail, the executive director of the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center, and Dominic Della Sala, chief scientist of the Geos Institute. Joseph, to stick with you for a moment, is there any preemption of potential court action in the bill as well?
Right. So once those 10-year plans are enacted, essentially, it seems like it would be very difficult to ever go to court over them and stop them. So if people were, you know, really concerned about, you know, anything that might be happening, it could be a recreational resource, it could be, you know, a water supply, it could be, you know, the effects of on a particular watershed or a community, that it would be very difficult for any community group to stop those timber sales.
All right, so in comparison now to the other bill, one that's already passed the House, the so-called Wyden and Walden, we keep getting run across those in Oregon, the DeFazio-Walden-Schrader bill, the OCTCJA, the Oregon and California Trust and Conservation Jobs Act, is that how it goes? All right,
yep.
So Dominic, is this bill, the Wyden bill, at least somewhat better than that in your perspective?
It is, but I don't think that's the best comparison. I think we need to compare it to the Northwest Forest Plan, which is giving us the current status quo protections that we have for the mature forest across the region. Now, granted, a lot of those forests are in the so-called matrix, but you know, a lot of the public has moved on about cutting older forest and wants to see the older forest protected. And if you look at the polling that's been done in the region, the public defines older forests at a younger age than both Wyden and DeFazio's legislation. So we're leaving a lot of those forests out of protection. We're weakening the Northwest Forest Plan, which was a regional plan to protect salmon, water quality, and endangered wildlife. And we're just kind of, again, pulling those blocks out from southern Oregon. And, you know, the comparison should be, are we giving enough protection to these forests when they are surrounded by a sea of clear cuts on private lands?
Does it meet, in your mind, some of the goals of the Northwest Forest Plan in terms of compliance with Endangered Species Act and Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, all that stuff?
I don't think it does. I think it's going to, over time, place in jeopardy the species that we care about in our region. It's going to put more pressure on salmon. It's going to put more pressure on species that can't live in a shotgun blast of clear cuts and a few parcels of mature forest. And it's going to raise the carbon dioxide levels from the degradation of forest that will be occurring over our region over the next several decades. And that's not good from a climate change standpoint.
Joseph Fail, I've heard it said about legislation and some efforts in the past, and certainly about this one as well, that if everybody comes out unhappy, the plan might actually be workable. What is your thought on that particular point of view?
It's an interesting one. I guess I see where folks are coming from with that. I think, you know, it's also important to do the right thing, you know, and I think the right thing here is probably a little bit more about what Dominic's talking about. The Northwest Forest Plan is working, you know, in a lot of ways. I mean, there have been studies that have come out showing how salmon are recovering in areas where the Northwest Forest Plan is implemented. So we get really concerned when this bill talks about reducing streamside buffers, for example, and being able to log closer to the stream. Well, so now that we have salmon recovering, why would we risk that by going back to practices that we know are harming salmon? So, we want to, you know, work with the senator, and, you know, I think there's several parts of this bill that we'd like to see taken out. The streamside buffers, the clear cutting that Dominic talked about, and those the public's ability to comment on their public lands, I think are really important parts of our federal land that we need to maintain, and we'd like to see those things worked on.
Let us take a call. Here's Derek and Talent. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange with Dominic Della Sala and Joseph Vail.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Jeffrey. Real quick, I hate to be redundant, but I challenge anyone who is flying and traveling over the region to just look down, and then I challenge them to look me in the eye and tell me honestly that they believe that the problem with our region has been a lack of timber harvest. I mean, you look down when you fly over this area, and it's a sea of clear cuts. And you can't say that management style has ended, because you can go up to the Cottonwood Timber Sale right now in the Ashland Resource Area of the BLM, and you can see stumps that are up to 4 feet in diameter and 260 years old. And this, I mean, it's just, it's incredible that this is what's continuing. And in the name of ONC, which I agree, the ONC Act is definitely geared toward timber production. But why, this is my question, why were they able to go in and log extensively on all the other lands that were supposed to be for multiple use, and now they cry foul about ONC, and we need to get the volume off ONC? That's what I'd like to know from Dominic and Joseph.
All right. Thanks for the call, Derek. Appreciate it. Dominic?
Well, I think Derek hit the nail on the head. I mean, every time I fly over the region, as I do anywhere else in most of the forested world, this is happening globally. And so what we have left are the remains of our natural inheritance, and we've really been drawing it down over the generations. So the question is, how much are we willing to give to the next generation or borrow from the next generation? And just take a look out the window next time you're flying over the region. You'll see what we mean. And the road network is another example. There are over 30,000 miles of forested roads in the Klamath-Siskiyou ecoregion alone. That's enough to drive Portland and back over 60 times. That's a lot of roads. Those are having impacts to salmon. These forests have been pushed to their brink, and pushing them any further to get short-term economic benefits is going to have ecological and economic consequences in the future. And I think that's what he's referring to.
even if people have no particular interest in, if they don't work in the timber industry, for example, they're still concerned about things like Josephine County, Curry County, where we're talking about the bottom dropping out of the public safety system because there's no timber money coming into the county coffers, which was the pipeline in years past. So, Joseph Vail, what do you say to people who say, hey, look, you know, I'm not really crazy about the timber cutting, but I still want to be sure that there are sheriff's deputies on patrol in my county?
Yeah, and, you know, it's a very important point, and, you know, obviously I live in Southern Oregon, and I want sheriffs, too, and libraries and all that. And, you know, it is a situation that's really unique to Oregon. You know, I mean, there's a lot of other states that have lots of public land and are able to figure this out and figure out how to get revenue for basic services. And I guess that's the question: is this a false choice? Do we have to sacrifice, you know, our environment to create revenue? And I think a lot of people see that as just the wrong way to go. We could certainly value these lands for, you know, the views that they give us, the clean water that they provide, the recreational opportunities, and there's a huge recreational industry and tourism industry that's built around quality of life that we have here in Southern Oregon. How do we value that? I mean, I'm not a tax expert, but there's been a lot of different ideas. Of course, we're kind of hamstrung by measures 5 and 50 that don't allow the counties to
raise. The property taxes are capped, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, in some of these counties, I mean, we're talking about like Curry County is like close to the cliff, and, you know, they need $3 million to remain solvent. You know, there's got to be some other way to get that revenue. Some different ideas have been floated around. A hike on the timber tax, which is the private lands industrial forest tax, which we have some of the lowest on the West Coast. You know, there's of course, the Secure Rural Schools legislation has been funding the counties for years, and we support reauthorization of that. So I think there's some different ideas around there on how to do it. The question is, you know, how much should we sacrifice the environment, and how much should these public lands, which, you know, a lot of people are valuing for things other than timber, the burden be on them versus on some other revenue generating mechanism.
And what do you see as the political possibilities here? I mean, we're talking, this is introduced by Ron Wyden, who's from the state that would be affected by it, and he chairs the Natural Resources Committee in the Senate. So this would have to have some power just upon its introduction, but does it appear that Senator Wyden would be able to round up the votes, particularly from his own party?
Well, certainly he's a powerful senator, and although putting a lot of stock in Congress passing things these days is probably not a good bet. So you never know, but certainly these ideas we'll see. And at the same time that Senator Wyden is doing this, the BLM is going through their plan revision process, which is supposed to end in 2015. So we either way, we will see some of these ideas come up in that plan revision process. And so I think it's really important for folks that care about these forests, care about, you know, the quality of life in Southern Oregon and all throughout Western Oregon, to weigh in both with Senator Wyden right now and with the Obama administration as they move forward with their planning process.
Dominic Della Sala from Geos Institute. By the numbers, is the Wyden plan looking a little better to conservation groups than the DeFazio, Walden, Schrader plan? Because certainly in board footage, it looks like it's talking about less timber cutting.
It is, but again, you know, you're splitting things that have already been reduced beyond their capacity to give any further. And I think we're certainly going to continue to take a look at this. I'm involved in a number of blue ribbon science panels that are looking at the legislation now. I just attended one on aquatics, and I can tell you this, that a lot of the scientists are not happy with what is in this legislation because it's a radical departure from the Northwest Forest Plan and would place in jeopardy a lot of the ecological values that are holding our region together.
Does this have, though, the stamp of approval? I've seen the names of Jerry Franklin and Norm Johnson attached to this plan. Does it? I mean, these are the gurus of forestry in the Northwest. How are they weighing in on this?
A lot of the ideas that are going into the so-called ecological forestry have come from Jerry Franklin and Norm Johnson, recycled from the New Perspectives forestry of the 1990s that they were also championing. But I think that there are lots of scientists that have some reservations and concerns about that because of how far it departs from a strategy that already is working, the Northwest Forest Plan.
Let's take another phone call here. Here's Phyllis in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking the Wyden Timber Plan with Dominic Della Sala and Joseph Vail.
Oh, hi. This is Phyllis. My question is, popularly, people talk about the volume of harvest from our forests, being the problem, why we have a lot of economic problems. But could part of that problem be related to the price that's accepted for the harvest?
In other words, if we accepted more money per stump,
if we demanded more money per stump.
That is an interesting question. Thanks for that, Phyllis. Appreciate it. Dominic, you got that one? Joseph, do you want to take a crack at that one?
There's supposed to be fair market value when you sell timber. I think one thing that does come into play right now, currently there's quite a bit of exporting of logs overseas, and a lot of those logs come from private lands. And you say, well, what's the problem with that? Well, what that does is it lowers the value. And so if all the private industrial timber owners are exporting their logs, then there's more pressure on these federal lands to produce logs to be milled domestically. So if we're really concerned about jobs, I think we should be concerned about the exporting of Oregon's logs to Asian markets.
All right. This will not be the last time we'll talk about this issue, I'm confident. In fact, we'll be talking about this a little further in our Vince Day segment, which will follow the coming break and Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac. I want to thank Dominic Della Sala, the chief scientist at the Geos Institute based in Ashland, for joining me here in the studio, and Joseph Vail, who's the executive director at the Klamath-Siskey Wildland Center, or KS Wild. Thank you both for being here today on the Jefferson
thank
Exchange.
Thank you. Stay warm.
Yeah, absolutely. It's still 0 degrees at Diamond Lake, I just checked. We'll come back again and talk more about the timber plan in our Vince Day segment following the Writer's Almanac. We'll also talk about what you think about the use of cell phones on airplanes. That'll be in Vince Day following this break, following Garrison Keillor, coming up on the Jefferson Exchange.